addresses women in general in this passage, and wives in particular. In doing so, he holds up Sarah, Abraham's wife, as an example or as a pattern for all Christian women, no matter what standing they are, whether they're married or not, or no matter what their age might be. He holds up Sarah as an example, as a pattern. And he says to Christian women in verse 6, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are. So he's writing to believers, Christian women, and he's addressing them in particular, and he says that you are the daughters of Sarah. Now you remember that Paul describes Abraham as the father of the faithful, and that term simply indicates that he was the pattern for all who hereafter or thereafter will believe on the Lord Jesus Christ. Abraham is the pattern and the example of faith. Well, here Peter takes Abraham's wife Sarah and he describes her as the mother of all Christian women, whose daughters ye are. Now, what does he mean? Well, it's something similar as the description given to Abraham. It simply means that Sarah is a pattern. She is an example of all Christian women. If you take a child will display the personality, the characteristics, the likeness of its parents. And you'll see some of the traits of the father in the child, and you'll see some of the traits of the mother in the child. And that's what Peter is doing here when he says that ye are the daughters of Sarah. In other words, you will have the traits, you will have the characteristics, you'll have the likeness, some of the likenesses that Sarah had as a woman of God, as a child of God. They will be reflected in all Christian godly women. And so he's holding up Sarah here in her characteristics as a pattern and an example for all Christian women. But what are those characteristics? Well, if you look at the notes, the first of them is her holiness of heart. The holiness of her heart. And Peter here emphasizes this as the chief characteristic. If you notice there in verse 3 and 4, the aim of Peter here is to teach what the priority of Christian women should be. And he's outlining the fact that the first priority of any Christian woman is the condition, the spiritual condition of her heart. Verse 3, he says, who's adorning? Let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair, and of wearing of gold, or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God of great price. He's talking about the order or the priority. Notice the word adorning there in verse 3. Who's adorning? The Greek word there is the word, or comes from the root cosmos. And that word is used most often in relation to the created universe. When it's translated, the majority of times in the New Testament, it's translated with the word world. And it's referring to the created universe. And it's highlighting the fact that this universe is a universe of order. God, in creating the universe, has placed order within it. There is design there. There is order. And that order brings all the elements together to work together and to function together. And now Peter takes that same word. This is very, very interesting. He takes that same word and he applies it here in relation to the life of Christian women. And you could really say here, what he's talking about is the order that we follow, the priorities that we have. And so he's saying that our priority, our order, is not first and foremost the outward adorning of plaiting the hair, wearing of gold, or putting on of apparel, but the hidden man of the heart. Now some people come to this text and they use it to say, well, Christian women shouldn't look after their appearance, that they shouldn't wear jewelry, that they shouldn't look after their hair or put on apparel and things like that. They use it in that sense, but that is wrong. That is a distortion of the text. Because what Paul is, or what Peter is saying here is that there's an order. And the order is that the priority that comes first in the life of a Christian woman is not outward, but inward. It is the heart. Now if you look at Genesis chapter 12, you will find a description given to us of Sarah. Genesis chapter 12 and verse 14. Abraham has come into the land of Canaan at the call of God, the command of God, and now he has moved on into the south because of famine. And he says to Sarah that she is his sister and not his wife, because Abraham was afraid. And verse 14 of Genesis 12, it came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair. And the word fair there doesn't have to do with the complexion of her skin or the color of her hair. It means, or it's elsewhere translated, beauty or beautiful. She was very beautiful. And what you have to remember here is that Abraham came into Canaan when he was 75. And Sarah was 10 years younger than him, so she was 65. And yet the Bible says here that she was very fair. She was very beautiful in her outward appearance. And you don't have that by neglecting your appearance. That would indicate that Sarah took care of her appearance, that she had an interest in her appearance. And the Bible teaches, I believe, that both men and women should take care of their appearance. And it's not wrong to take care of our appearance. It's not wrong to make sure the hair is done. It's not wrong in relation to our complexion and our physical appearance to take care of it. But what Peter is saying, it's not the chief priority. It's not the chief priority. Whose adorning, whose order is not first and foremost the outward adorning of plaiting hair and wearing of gold or putting on of apparel, but rather the hidden man of the heart. It is inward. It's the condition of the heart. And that is what Sarah followed. She followed this order, and she realized that this was more important because she recognized this is what God counts valuable. You see, in the sight of God, this is of great price. This is of great value. This is what God counts valuable, the condition of the heart. And you notice that there are two characteristics there, a meek and quiet spirit in verse 4. She was adorned with a meek and quiet spirit. The word meek there means a gentle spirit. A spirit that endures all things with an even temper. A spirit that endures all things with an even temper. This is the spirit of meekness that she had. This is what she considered to be more important. And she spent more time seeing to having a meek spirit rather than having a beautiful outward countenance. She didn't neglect her outward countenance, but she recognized that a meek spirit was more important. And then a quiet spirit. What does that mean, a quiet spirit? It means making no agitation or disturbance, having a tranquility from within. A quiet spirit, a peace within, that doesn't make an agitation or a disturbance. It doesn't mean that women should be silent in conversation. That's not what it means. And Paul says in Romans that we should study to be quiet. We should be studied to be quiet. And that's what he's referring to. He's talking about this tranquility within that doesn't agitate and doesn't make a disturbance. And so you see, Sarah had this condition of heart. She had this priority, she had this order, And in verse 5, you see how she's described as a holy woman. For after this manner, in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God adorned themselves. This is the garments, this is the adornment that they consider to be most important, to be the chief priority. So here she's held up in this example, in this pattern, first of all, in relation to the holiness of her heart. And this is what God counts valuable. This is of great price in the sight of God. Now then notice second that she's also held up not only for the holiness of her heart, but she's held forth as an example in her honouring of her husband. In verse 6, even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters ye are, as long as you do well and are not afraid with any amazement. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord. Now I think this is a tremendous passage, not because I'm a man, not because I'm a husband, but I think it's tremendous because of where it is quoted from. Now if you turn to Genesis 18, I want you to see this. I think this is really amazing. I think it's tremendous because it shows us something about the Lord. Genesis chapter 18 and verse 11. And it is the time when the Lord came to Abraham and appeared to him again and renewed his promise that he and Sarah would have a son. And we're told there that Sarah laughed in verse 11. Now Abraham and Sarah were old and well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Abraham was 99, Sarah is 90 or 89. There's 10 years between them. And whenever Sarah, she was standing in the door of the tent listening, and therefore, verse 12, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And the Lord said unto Abraham, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of a surety bear a child when I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not, for she was afraid. And he said, nay, but thou didst laugh. Now you'll notice that Sarah here is displaying doubt and unbelief regarding the promise of God. The Lord is speaking here to Abraham, and he says, I'm going to give you a son. I promised this away back in Mesopotamia over 25 years ago, and now the time has come whenever you and Sarah will have a son. And Sarah, she's listening behind the tent door. She's hearing this, and in her heart, she laughs. And it's a laugh of unbelief. It's a laugh of doubt. She doesn't believe. She questions. After I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? You see how the Lord interpreted that in the verse 13? Wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of a surety bear a child, which I am old? She's doubting the promise, the word of God. So this is a moment of weakness. It's a moment of failure in Sarah's life. But isn't it interesting that many years afterwards, when Peter quotes from this experience and from this incident, that he doesn't quote the failure of Sarah, but he quotes what was good and what was honourable. Because even in her unbelief, in verse 12, she says, after I'm waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also. She's talking about Abraham. And she describes him there as her Lord, her master, or her head in the marriage union. Now this is a statement of unbelief. It's a question of doubt and unbelief. And yet, Peter, under divine inspiration, seizes on what was good. Didn't seize on the failure, But he laid hold on what was good. And he saw, even in that time of failure, when she displayed unbelief, he saw her honor and her respect for her husband. She describes Abraham as her Lord. And I think that's a tremendous illustration to us of how the Lord deals with us. How the Lord deals with us in mercy and with tenderness. For even when we fail, the Lord still sees those things that are good in us. And he highlights those things. Isn't that interesting? That in the times that Sarah is referred to in the New Testament, even when it is a setting of failure and a setting of unbelief, a moment of weakness, that the Lord nevertheless still holds up what is good and what is commendable to her sight and to the honour and the commendation of Sarah herself. But the point here is that she honoured her husband. She was in subjection. She recognised in the marriage union that the Lord had an order. And see, again it comes to this word cosmos. There is an order here. The Lord first, and then the husband under the Lord, and then the wife in subjection to the husband under the Lord. That's the order. And here she's recognizing that order. She's in subjection unto her own husband, and she gives him that respect that is due to him. Not because it is inherent to him, but because the Lord has put him in that role and within that order. And therefore she's showing respect ultimately to the Lord, not just to Abraham, but she's showing respect ultimately to the Lord. So we see her here in the honouring of her husband. But then notice thirdly the happiness of her home. Because I think this really follows on from the previous two. The holiness of her heart, and then the honouring of her husband within that marriage relationship in obedience to the Lord. And the result is that God blessed her with a happy home. Now, she wasn't perfect, neither was Abraham. And we've seen that in relation to her faith. We've seen it also a few weeks ago when we looked at Abraham's faith. There were times of weakness. There were times of doubt. You remember how Sarah was impatient of the fulfillment of the promise and said to Abraham, "Here's Hagar. Take her and use her as a surrogate mother." She was trying to force the purpose of God. It failed. So she wasn't perfect, neither was Abraham, but God was working in her, moulding her, maturing her, along with Abraham, as he does with us. And he strengthened that faith, and the end result was that the Lord gave them blessing, the blessing of joy in their home. Now turn to Hebrews chapter 11. And Sarah here is listed among the heroes of faith, which Paul identifies in Hebrews 11. And he says in verse 11, he says, "Through faith also, Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised." Now, she has tried to force the purpose of God and bring about the result herself, giving Hagar to Abraham. And then, whenever the Lord said she would have a son, she laughed in her heart, the laugh of unbelief. But the Lord rebuked her. And the result of that was that Sarah's faith was quickened. Sarah's faith was quickened. And from that point, she judged the Lord, or she considered him faithful who had promised. And through faith, she received strength to conceive seed. She believed the Lord. The Lord said, "Is anything too hard for me?" And she believed that. She believed from that moment that this was a possibility, that the Lord was going to do it. And what happened whenever the child was born? Well, look at Genesis 21. Genesis chapter 21. and verse 6. The Lord visited Sarah, and as he had said, and the Lord did unto Sarah as he had spoken. That's verse 1. And Sarah conceived and bare Abraham a son in his old age at the set time of which God had spoken to him. And Abraham called the name of his son that was born unto him, whom Sarah bare to him, Isaac. And Abraham circumcised his son Isaac, being 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born unto him. And Sarah said, God hath made me to laugh, so that all that hear will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said unto Abraham that Sarah should have given children suck? For I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned, and Abraham made a great feast the same day that Isaac was weaned. Notice the emphasis there, God hath made me to laugh. That's what Isaac means, laughter. Laughter. She laughed with unbelief, but the Lord rebuked her, and she received faith. Her faith was strengthened. She believed the promise, and God brought this little child, and they called his name Isaac. God hath made me to laugh. You see the happiness, the joy that Sarah has. She received it from the Lord. She received it through faith. She received it because she had this order, this priority, holiness of heart first before the outward adorning, and submission to the Lord, submission to her husband as the head of that marriage union, and as a result the Lord brings this happiness into the home. And it's true that there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. And she trusted, and she obeyed, and the Lord made her to laugh. The Lord brought that joy into her heart. May the Lord bless this study, and may he help us to follow the pattern and the example that is set to us by the saints of old.